This is what Brooklyn sounds like.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa, and I give a shit. You know what? I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit today because, you know what? I just came back from like almost a week away, and I was outdoors in California. So I don't care about anything now. Like, I have a new perspective. Life is so good. And if you haven't gotten a vacation lately, take a vacation and go somewhere and go outdoors because it's really important to your mental health. Tell your boss that Dr. Lisa said that she prescribes a vacation and go do it. So anyway, thanks for listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on Radio Free Brooklyn, the greatest radio station in the world, because I've checked them all, and this is definitely the best one. You know, it's really important to support media, free media. You know, nonprofit media, you know about that, because we've got a president. But you know why. You're listening to this show, so you already know. So go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. Okay, so I'm going to tell you about my guest who looks like she's about to start like giggling when I talk about her. I'm going to talk about her. Hi, Jillian.
Hi.
Jillian Steinhauer. Is that how I say your name? She's nodding yes. Okay, so I got the name right. We're off to a good start. So here's the thing. This is what I want to talk to you guys about. I have a really important social issue that I think something that's really important to me is that we don't talk about death enough. So that's where this started. And Jillian curated the show at the Elizabeth Foundation for the Arts, which is a really, really great art organization. If you don't know about it, you really should. It's on 39th Street, 323 West 39th Street. But anyway, so Jillian curated this really moving. I mean, I think this, like, to me, I know this sounds cheesy, but I think it's an important show, and I think it's really worth seeing. And because of the art, but more than that, I think that that we need to really talk about death and grief and all that stuff. So I think that's really important. So here's my plan, folks. I'm going to tell you really briefly about the show. I'm going to tell you what's coming up with the show. And then I'm going to have Jillian talk to you, explain the show. And then we are going to have a discussion about how Jillian came up with this idea and the results, her results. She's nodding her head. So you agree with that, Jillian? Makes sense to you?
I agree. Sounds good.
Okay. So this is what I'm going to say. I'm going to tell you that I'm just going to read really quickly something that her friend, who's an art critic, writer, wrote, so that it's brief and it's put better than I can ad lib. When it comes to grief, our culture values a stiff upper lip, but stoic composure comes with a price. It keeps the realities at arm's length, including truths about the erasure, enslavement, and slaughter of Native Americans and Africans. In the presence of absence suggests that mourning may be a means of empowerment, folks, and a way through it is a show that requires a certain openness, a bit of courage even, to experience. I love that because I do think that the show can challenge the viewer, you, because you're going to go see it, folks. And it's an experience. It's really taking in some great art, but it's also like a much bigger social issue. It's closing in a week and a half, that's true, and there's a panel discussion about the design politics and future memorials led by the show's curator, art critic Joel Steinhauer. That's tonight, folks. So I'm going to tell you the address. It's EFA Project Space. It's 323 West 39th Street, second floor. The discussion tonight is from 6:30 to 8:30. And by the way, There's also another event on May 11th, which is a week from Saturday, and that is the last day. And I can't say how important I personally think the show is, and I think you should go and see it before it closes. And I know the feedback has just been phenomenal. I'm just going to read quickly all the names of the people involved in it. The publications, besides being led, the whole thing's led by Jillian, okay, folks? That's why she's the one here. But there are contributions on the publications from Michelle Garcia, Jesse Lynn, Nick Witchley, and Megan, curator advisor Megan Karnick. But the artists in the show are Inbal, okay, I'm not going to get it all right. Inbal, Abergel, Emily Harris, Leah Davis, Valerie Jung Estabrook, Hawk E-A-V, whatever, Edgar Heap of Birds, Nene Humphrey, Melinda Hunt. My husband knows her. I'll tell you about that later another time. They did a project. He does a project. He does like abandoned stuff. Jamil Alawale. That's wrong too. Cusco M. I really murdered these names that talk about death. Carmen Lane, Todd Shalom. All right. So, Jillian, can we, in your words, can you go ahead, describe the show for us?
Sure. It's a group exhibition, and it's about grief and it's about death, but it approaches them from a sort of mix of political and personal. So it's about, there are a lot of artists in the show. Almost everyone has lost people who were close to them, so a lot of their work came out of those places. But at the same time, there are a lot of artists who are dealing with death and grief as a larger societal phenomenon, whether it's the way we ignore it for certain people or the ways certain deaths have been overlooked or reconnecting with ancestors who were enslaved. So it tries to tie together those two strands and just sort of think about how grief is very pervasive, but we don't really talk about it and we don't really... I feel like there is a whole like death movement and there are some social spaces, but I think they're limited and they're still sort of growing. So part of it was wanting to create a space where we could have these conversations and think these thoughts and feel these feelings. I was joking before it opened that everyone was going to come to the opening and we were all just going to cry for like 2 hours. So there's 10 artists in the show. One artist, Todd Shalom, made a performance. The other 9 have work in the galleries. There's some work that was made specifically for the show, other work that already existed and I just brought in. And I think and hope the works really speak to each other and it's all about this topic. I think that's a good overview.
Yeah, I think another thing I want to point out is that the artists all come from pretty much different places but are very well themed. I think that's a great thing about the curation. So when you walk away, you have this really like very... very broad, very varied view on grief and what it means to that person's social group or whatever. And, we need to talk about things like slavery and how, and the American Indians and all that stuff. And it's just really important shit. Really important shit.
Thank you. I wanted to mention, two mm-hmm. things. One,
go ahead.
Well, one thing I actually just wanted to backtrack and just note mm-hmm. that the writing that you read at the beginning, I just wanted to say it's by Mary Louise Schumacher, who used to work for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and is amazing. And then I also wanted to say, and part of it also was, I feel like I've seen shows, some shows, not many, about death, like death as a phenomenon. And I really wanted this to be a little bit different. Like it's very much about death, but I wanted it to be a little more about grief, if that distinction makes any sense. And sort of the idea of loss and not just like literally how we bury people, but like the feelings a little bit more than that.
Yeah. Well, the idea of death. I mean, one of the things that I think of in modern day that I think is actually helpful about Facebook is that how often we hear about death. And I think that's really, really important, you know, in humans in normal times, you know, before people die all the time and we have to become aware of that and integrate it into our lives. So in my capacity as a pretend shrink, I had a really, really lovely, interesting, fascinating conversation in preparation for the show today with Jillian on the phone when I was in California. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot from talking to her, and I'm going to encourage her to share what with you personally, what I learned from speaking with her. But I just wanted to say that I thought that Jillian had, well, first of all, the show is dedicated to Henrietta, Suzanne, and Brania.
Brania.
That I pronounced that right. So I knew, I saw that, and I used that as a way in to have a discussion with Jillian about like how this idea of grief was personal to her. So I think that was a really rich area to find out how she dealt with grief on a personal level and how she processed it into a society level in a way that's bigger than her or one person in a very humanistic way. And I want us to share that with you today, all of you, you listener, you. And I want to share that. And I also wanted to say that I thought that it was really a good, healthy, I thought it was extremely healthy, frankly. So much so that it was like almost threatening. I'm like, this chick has her shit together. She has supportive parents. She has a support group. Because I think that Jillian was able to really process this, even though I don't think she had a whole lot of experience with grief, because I think her family, like, they stick together. And so she was able to use her writing, her work, her interest of combining art and social issues to process this and share with everybody. And I imagine it must have been fucking healing. This is what art is for, folks. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Jillian, so you can tell us what that dedication to Henrietta, Suzanne, and Brania mean. Maybe you can start with that.
Sure. I actually just want to say that I feel like, yes, I do maybe have my shit together, but I also have a therapist, so.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's part of having your shit together, right?
It's very helpful. Okay, so yeah, so the dedication is for the three women in my life who died in the last roughly 3.5 years. So two of them were grandmothers, Henrietta and Brania, the old-timey names. Henrietta lived here in Brooklyn. She had lived here since the 50s. We were very close. And Brania lived in Montreal. She was my grandmother who survived the Holocaust.
Wow.
We were not as close, but because she was just a complicated person to be close to. But, you know, I really loved her, and she was an amazingly strong woman. And then Suzanne was my partner's mother. And that was a really difficult one. She got sick sort of out of nowhere and then, passed away, and that was tough. So that took over a lot of my life mm-hmm. in the last few years. So that was sort of,
just so we understand. So it was your mother's mother that passed, and then your partner's mother.
It was my dad's mother, and then my partner's mother, and then my mother's mother.
So you had to deal with also not just what was going on in you and your partner's lives. You also had to deal with the parents on both sides. So
definitely.
There's a lot. That's really complex. I think that's complex.
Yeah, it was a lot. And I will say there were three different, you know, apartments/houses to clean out in three different countries. And just a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, in some ways, I feel like I just got lucky. Like EFA, you know, approached me and asked if I would be interested in curating the show or a show.
Mm-hmm.
And when I decided I was interested in doing it, I came up with the theme. But, you know, I don't know that I would have otherwise known where to put my grief and what to do with
really?
It. Yeah. I mean, I think I haven't really written about a lot of this stuff. I think mm-hmm. in some ways I still haven't figured out how to write about it. So curating the show became, like you said, really healing, but I didn't really know that going in.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting. So they reached out to you.
And then they were like, oh, do you have any ideas? And so I brainstormed ideas. And this was one that, you know, I was like, well, I should draw from life. What is the thing that I'm really thinking about right now? This is the thing I'm really thinking about right now. And I should say, too, I mean, we talked about this a little bit, but there's definitely a political element for me. I mean, part during this time period when all this stuff was happening was also when Trump was elected.
Right.
So that was really, really hard for me, as I know it was for many, many people. And there was something about it that just, you know, it made everything feel worse, right? It still does. I mean,
well, I also remember when we were talking on the phone that you had said that you were blindsided by it.
Yeah.
Which, and you're very involved in social issues. So I imagine politics are pretty close to your heart. And that must have been, there's this shocking thing that we go through when, you know, people die. And there is a certain kind of death when Trump got elected. So I
definitely
can imagine how that would have compounded everything.
Yeah. I mean, part of me, you know, feels like that, like the white person in the Dave Chappelle sketch, or was it the SNL sketch where they, like, you know, he's in the background being like, of course he's going to win. And then they're all like, no, there's no way he could never win. Like, that's how I feel.
Right.
In retrospect. But I was.
You're not alone.
But I
you
was.
Are not alone.
Yeah, and I was shocked. And it was painful.
Yeah. Yeah. And it could also be, you know, it could have been rigged. So who knows, you know, who really knows what happened?
Yeah.
But so I'm interested in, like, the journey that you went on to get to particularly what's happened with, you know, Indians and African-Americans and stuff. So how did it process for you? You started thinking about it on a personal level.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I started thinking about it on a personal level, and I started just reaching out to people, doing research, talking, getting recommendations from folks. And I reached out to a handful of people early on. And, you know, a lot of the way the show evolved was from conversations with artists, because they had been thinking about this issue, some of them for their whole careers, some of them for, you know, shorter mm-hmm. times, but still a long mm-hmm. time.
When you say issue, I'm sorry, I just want to be clear. So you're talking about the idea of death, grief,
yeah.
death and grief personally to them, or
yeah.
personally? And
so for, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it sort of started with, like, talking to people who I knew were dealing with it personally. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the people who were dealing with it personally, we also had conversations about how it's both personal and reflected on a societal level, and how mm-hmm. the two are intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
And so a number of the artists in the show, having those conversations with them, like talking to Edgar Heap of Birds and him telling me, you know, grief is this driver of what he does because it's a fact of life on the reservation, you know, or talking to Jameel Oluwole Kosoko or M. Carmen Lane about being African-American and having that sort of be inherited trauma. Right. It's something you live with. It's something you grow up with, even though it's also personal. So having those conversations, I think, was what really shaped me to sort of look at it in that direct, take it in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And because I have a penchant for thinking about larger social issues, it occurred to me that that was kind of the show I hadn't really seen. Like, I had seen shows about death, but it's often as a very universal or personal phenomenon.
Right.
But it does feel so related to the current moment in our country and the politics of that moment also. Because
right.
the country was literally built on death. I mean, there was the genocide of the Native Americans and the enslavement of Africans. Like, that, we literally built the country on mass death.
And I also think that people think once death, like, well, that stuff's all over, that's they're dead. It's beyond us. But unless, you know, as a shrink, as a pretend shrink, unless you deal with death, it's still going to keep coming up unless you acknowledge it and can process it. So,
and that's what kept coming up for me in thinking about the connection. It feels just like a metaphor for society. Like, we have as a country, haven't dealt with those founding sins. And therefore, we haven't worked through it and we elected Trump. Like, the two map onto each other very well.
Right. I can see that. I mean, part of the reason we're still having issues about, you know, race is because we haven't really dealt with the whole death thing
yeah.
or the whole grief thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that African-Americans may be dealing with that more directly in a certain way.
Yeah, well, and again, that's why I wanted to bring all those voices into the show.
So you must have. So it sounds like from your personal experience that you were able to sort of draw bigger circle when you started talking to the artists.
Yep.
And then did you see it more as a social? That's when you started seeing it more of a social thing.
Very much, yeah. But I will say it's interesting because I think for most of them, or many of them, it really works on both levels. Like I see it on both levels mm-hmm. too. Like, it doesn't erase the personal, you know? Like
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not true for everyone, but for many of the artists in the show, even in the wall text, like I was able to point to, okay, this person started making this work after their father died or mm-hmm. after their brother died, or mm-hmm. this is dedicated to their grandmother. So the personal element is still mm-hmm. very much there.
Did it make you feel closer to them than most other shows that you've probably, you know, than a typical show where you might just pick, well, I don't know, but about that stuff,
I've
you know,
never,
you haven't,
I've
have
never
you curated
cu-
it?
No, I've never
you,
curated
that's
it before.
That's the first show you've
yeah.
curated?
Yeah.
Really good at it.
Thank you. No, it did make me feel closer to them. And that was part of it too, was that I found grief very isolating, or I find mm-hmm. it very isolating, especially mm-hmm. at my age. I think a lot of people haven't dealt with it mm-hmm. as much.
20s, 30s?
30s. So people are starting to, but like when my partner's yeah. mother died, like I didn't have a lot of peers who had lost parents.
Right.
So talking to the artists made me feel less alone because they were thinking about it and going through it too.
Did you find that you wound up discussing your own personal, you know, issues with your, so you were
yeah,
able
absolutely.
To, so you both shared. That's so interesting.
Yeah. We had very personal conversations. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so interesting. So what about the feelings of, sharing and healing? Like you had quite a few gallery events, right? Mm-hmm. More than average, I think, for a show.
Well, maybe more than average for most shows. Although, if you know about EFA Project Space, they tend to do a lot of events. So compared mm-hmm. to their average, I feel a bit like low on the
you
low end.
You could have done more.
Yeah, exactly.
Should have done more.
Exactly.
See that overachiever there. That overachiever thing.
That's accurate.
I think you did, huh? I think you did quite a few. I mean, I mean, the one that I attended with, I'm not going to get his name. The Indian.
Native American.
Native American. Oh my God. Listen to, see?
Edgar Heap of Birds.
Yeah. I have to say that just being at one of those was extremely illuminating and
good.
Just hearing him talking about like what it really meant to be a Native American.
Yeah.
And also, I think what another thing was is that it wasn't all sad. There's so much hope and upliftingness. Can you talk a little bit about the events that you had and what the audience or the, you know, what have people gotten out of the stuff that you've been able to really directly share like that? Do you want to tell
yeah.
us a little about that?
Yeah. I mean, I was worried going into the show that it was going to be like way too dark. And like I said, we would all just cry. But I think having the events has really helped. And I think some of the work is more hopeful. But, you know, the opening was amazing. I thought there were tons of people there. And I just, people mm-hmm. kept coming up to me and just being like, thank you for making this.
Uh-huh.
And that was really moving. I had actually gone a few weeks earlier to a death cafe at Greenwood Cemetery, and someone from my death cafe group showed up,
oh,
which
wow.
was amazing and like really inspiring to me and just wonderful because
wow.
I don't really know him. And then there was a performance there and a performance choreographed
right.
by Jamil Alawale Kosoko. And I thought the performance was nice because it was quite abstract. And that was a nice counterpart mm-hmm. to a lot of the work, which is not. Mm-hmm. It's very hit you over mm-hmm. the head. And then we had Edgar's talk, which was, I thought it was great. I mean, he's so eloquent and well-spoken and smart. And I mean, he's brilliant. And he describes, you know, well, the real challenges that Native Americans face, but he does it in a very just like sort of matter of fact way. And he just, I don't know, he has this really wonderful demeanor where you feel like he's very approachable. And so
yeah.
I thought that was really wonderful.
And not angry. Like I didn't get the feeling like there was like, he was something that he understood that he was trying to develop and work on and help society, help us all heal from it. It wasn't just like,
yeah,
these are my, you know, you mistreated my people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like
no,
which,
I agree.
Which is a really amazing
yeah.
way to be able to take all of that in.
Definitely.
Did you wind up having a lot of, did you finish?
Yeah.
Did you finish with that? I was going to ask you if you wound up having a lot of conversations about death or if people, what, like, where people talking to you about death? Has this been a month of death for you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, definitely at the opening. I mean, since then, there's just been a lot of really, like, a really great Facebook posts, or, like, someone will post on Instagram, and I'm like, oh, my God, that's so moving. But at the opening, there were definitely people coming up, you know, to me, and I think the artists, too, being like, oh, I lost my mother, and this really means a lot to me, like, making those connections, mm-hmm. which is emotionally intense, but also really gratifying that you know it's speaking to them.
Right, right, right. So, what do you think? Do you feel like, differently? How did this show affect you?
That's a great question. I think it did. And I think I didn't realize it while I was doing it, but,
week and a half, don't miss it.
I think it really was healing, like you said at the beginning. And I don't know that I even realized that that's what I was doing originally, mm-hmm. but, something about making something, creating something from mm-hmm. these very sad, debilitating mm-hmm. feelings has been really good for me.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that I don't feel sad anymore, right. but it just changes the sort of character of it, mm-hmm. maybe, or it makes it me feel like they don't have to be as debilitating, you know?
Well, when you were saying that you felt like it was isolating, do you still have that feeling of isolation? Or, I mean, it must have.
Yes and no. I mean, really? I still feel like
it's personal to everybody.
Yeah, exactly. And I still feel like I'm not having the conversations all the time or as much, maybe. And I still feel like, you know, there's experiences that I've now gone through that I think some other people haven't. So there are still elements of that.
Right, of course.
But also much less so than before. Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a really good, it's like a really good shoring up, or a really good, you know, emotional muscle building thing that you did for your future too. I think you'll probably reflect back on this, you know. I mean, it's something that, it's a good foundation for anybody, really.
I hope so.
Yeah. So we have 3 minutes. Is there anything else, or should we read over all the details about getting people to show up?
Whatever you think is best.
Well, I wanted to ask you do you see anything, any more work coming out of this? I mean,
I don't know that I'm going to curate again anytime soon, but I would like to write about this more. So that's sort of where I see it mm-hmm. going in the future. There are so many, part of what I learned in the research process was just like learning about people who are doing work about death. I mean, like I said, there is a whole community. There is a huge community. And so it made me more interested in getting to know those people and writing mm-hmm. about their work and learning about their work and experiencing mm-hmm. it. So I feel like that's probably the direction it right. will take in the future.
Nothing specific, but do you feel like your interest is stronger now? Or
yeah, definitely.
That's so interesting.
Well, and I feel like also being interested in it, and then that makes you deal with it and sort of look it in the face, right? Like if death is just a part of life, then you have a different relationship to it. And I think I grew up with it very like behind closed doors mm-hmm. or sort of we avoid it. And that's what has made it so painful. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like your reaction to it through the show is different than your parents say, or are they,
I don't
do you
know.
Think
I mean,
they're
they
like, why is Jillian so in talking about grandma's death still? Is there any of that?
I don't know. I mean, my parents don't really talk about anything like emotional. They're like of that older generation that I don't know. They don't. That's not their thing. So I feel like they might be asking that, but they probably would ask that about me of anything.
There's Jillian going off again.
Yeah. Or they're like, why is she in therapy? I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So right.
It's like they don't.
Just emotions.
Yeah. They don't exactly. They're like, what are feelings? So I feel like it's just a different approach to life.
Okay, well, I want to make sure that everybody knows about the event tonight, which I think sounds really awesome. It's called Collective Grief, the Design, Politics, and Future Memorials. Do you want to just give us a top line on this? This is going to be...
Sure, it's just a conversation with 4 different artists and architects who have designed like very untraditional memorials, talking about how we publicly mourn.
Right, because memorials can mean so many different things.
Yep.
And we are, this society is in a discussion
yep,
of them
exactly.
right now. And,
exactly.
you know, Robert E. Lee and all that stuff. So it's 6:30 to 8:30 at the Elizabeth Foundation for the Arts Project Space, which is 323 West 39th Street, second floor. And the panel discussion is co-represented by Reimagine End of Life.
Mm-hmm.
that an organization that you
It's a really great festival, actually. Speaking of the deaf community, they do a festival, one in San Francisco and one in New York every year, and it's all about deaf.
Oh, interesting.
So there'll be one in the fall, and people should check
it
out.
It's
a really great event.
That's great. Well, anyway, I can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
It was really great talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
And I love, really, I mean, you know I love your show.
Thank you so much.
It was really, really great.
I love your show, too.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, folks, so that was Jillian Steinhauer. And guess what? We are getting ready for our next guest. But in the meantime, I'm going to tell you more about how great Radio Free Brooklyn is. Because it is. It's so great. We do such great stuff here. Do you know we have like every kind of music, every kind of talk show, every kind of everything. It's the most inclusive organization, radio station, like if for real, we have like old people here. We have young people. We have people from other countries. We have people. I think we have a show in Spanish. I hope we should. Anyway, so what you should do is make friends with us. And you know how you can do that? You can download our app. So go to radiofreebrooklyn.org. Go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/iPhone or go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/Android and download the app. That's what you should do because you know what? You might be thinking, I might want to listen to some music. And then you just turn it on and you would get like the most wonderful, maybe unpredictable music and expand your mind and learn, you know, about some music you wouldn't have learned, or you might get a music show you really love. You already know the music. You might get a talk show like me, something else. So join us, okay? And now for our second half hour, we have the lovely, wonderful, happy go lucky. He looks happy go lucky today.
And then he made a serious. I'm sitting here with the headphones are on and it's just the sound of your voice. I want this. Someone needs to make an app and you can just like walk around and Lisa Levy will talk to you in her soothing voice and like tell you it's all going to be okay.
See how good it makes me feel so good. But anyway. So we have
ask Dr. Lisa, what green juice should I order?
Ask
Dr. Lisa, what should I do at the bank?
One of those like text me and make all your decisions.
No, I want to hear the
and
voice.
And your life will
the
wind
voice in
up
my ear
like
is
mine.
Really, really good.
Well, I'm glad to hear, and I am so happy to hear that.
I haven't been here since you got these fancy new digs too.
You were only in the basement studio.
Yeah,
I'm
this feels
sorry
really
about
really.
Doesn't it seem official?
Yeah, syndicated.
Like, doesn't it look like, I really do know what I'm doing, right?
Sure.
Like, yeah, but you know me well.
You'd better. So you there's technology better. Everywhere.
So let me tell you about, I know, I don't need to use most of it.
Oh, cool.
So here's the deal with Christopher Stout, folks. So I know Christopher's like my pal, it's true. But before he was my pal, I met him through the Bushwick Art Crit Group, I believe. I met him through so many things.
Yeah.
And we've done so many things together. We've done some incredible art, some famous art performance where I sat naked on a toilet for 2 days. We shared that. So many things. Christopher is a really important human in my life, and I think he is to many, many people. So to me, he's a curator and an artist. I'm just vamping this, Christopher. This is how I'm going to explain you. I'm explaining you, but
oh, good. My mom can listen, and then she'll understand it too.
And me too. So anyway, when I first met Christopher, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago. Maybe I don't know. Let's not think because then I'll think about how old I am.
Eight
years ago. So. I met him in more of a capacity as a curator gallerist. And over the years, I knew he made art and I've seen some of his, you know, pieces that he made before. I've met him when he was in San Francisco that were pretty fabulous. But I've seen his art develop as of last couple of years, and he has really focused more on art and less on the curating that he was doing, although he is still doing it. And I think that it's been a real joy for me to see Christopher coming to the fore, the Christopher making part of Christopher. And he's also done, you know, I'm thinking about it now, some of your performance dance pieces. So I thought that you just showed so much vulnerability in your dance, like in a way that I didn't know you had it in you. And it's really like, this is nothing to do with what we're really going to talk about today.
Sure.
But you know what I'm saying?
It's like a can of worms.
You put that out there. You fucking put that out there, man. And I didn't know you could do that.
I didn't either. I studied dance for a hot second in college, like my electives kinds of thing. And I enjoyed it immensely and loved it. But I wasn't really of the ilk.
Right.
I was working on a show and I wanted dance to be in the show. Like, I am, like, so enthralled with, like, Jason Andrews.
I don't know what that is.
And he had the gallery with Deb Brown.
Oh, that guy. He's a dancer?
Yes, he's real. And
that guy's a dancer?
But he's a person that swims in the dance world and in the art world together. And I wanted dance to be in my thing. And long story short, the choreographer came in, who's a friend, and looked at the work and said, I will choreograph a dance in response to your work if you, here's the condition, you have to dance in it. And I wanted to dance and I wanted to work with it. And I hadn't danced in years. And I was like, sure.
You must have gotten great feedback on that, right?
Dance is pain. Dance is pain.
Physical and emotional.
Emotional, mental, all of it.
Like, I think that's more putting yourself out there than even singing, isn't it? More vulnerability? Or maybe I'm just
There's
projecting.
No auto-tune for dance.
Yeah, I mean, also, like, it's less, people have less of a frame of reference for it.
Right.
It's less common, so people don't know how to interpret it.
When
Okay, well, let's get down. We don't have any time, Christopher.
All right.
Damn it.
Sorry. You keep asking interesting questions.
Okay. No.
Have stories
attached. So here's
to them.
The thing. Christopher and I want to talk about gay abstraction,
or
the emergence of gay abstraction, right?
Yes.
In the abstraction in the gay world,
abstract
art.
Yeah.
So we basically want to talk about that, but we also want to, I'm going to stop him a couple minutes short because I want to hear about this project that he's doing about the history of art in Bushwick, past and present. But first I want to tell you, let me just tell you about the show that that we're going to discuss that he has work in. It's called Infinite Rhizome. And it's at Lichtenfire, and the idea is an endless plateau of interconnectivity. And the artists in the show, besides Christopher Stout, are Augustus Goetz. I'll murder these names too. Augustus Goetz, Alan Hansen, Alan Steele, Christopher Stout, Jeff Wallace, and Gerald Wolf. And it's the concept, and the gallery is run by Priska Juska. Anyway, it says in many ways their work points to a lateral interconnectedness. Their visual language, however, independent, demonstrates fluid, organic, artistic interrelation akin to the growth pattern of a lateral biological stem. So it's very organic, really. And this is up till May 5th, folks. May 5th. Get off your fucking asses and see the show. It is a really, really special show. And it's really
I will say it a little. So this weekend is Freeze Weekend.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And our show is up and closes currently with the closing of Freeze. And we're having a fun drinks party on Friday night.
Ooh,
so
drinks.
If you want to check in with us after your fair going on Friday, or even if you are just have been in the city all Friday and want to come see the show and have drinks with us.
There you go. And you'll be there, Christopher.
I will. And I won't be drinking the vodka, but I will be there.
You will be there. Yeah. Okay, so it's 175 Rivington Street.
Folks. Yeah, Rivington and Clinton.
It's called Lichtenfire.
Yes.
175 Rivington Street. So make sure you get there because it's really, really great. So talk to me about abstraction and how what's going on with abstraction in the gay world.
So I'll set the show up and then I'll set up my work because it is a really good show.
Okay.
And I am looking at the clock.
I want to keep you on track. I want to keep you in track.
I love that about you. So Infinite Rhizome is a show of six artists. All of us have deep relationships with the gallery and all of us have worked with her on several projects, solo projects, group projects, both. I think this is my 11th project with the gallery in 3 years. Like we go deep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the point about the interconnectedness, and she's very clear. It's like, it's not a dialogue. It's a conversation.
Mm.
So we're all talking with each other, but and visually we all look very familial, but what's going on inside of our works can in some cases be very, very different. So we're actually starting at very different places and visually meeting at the same place.
Right, right. But the room has a very strong cohesive vibe.
Yes.
But each piece is its own person, but it all has a very strong vibe
when you're in the room.
Yeah.
None of the other artists work in queer abstraction. And I think what's interesting is that I have used the word queer abstract. I've just started using it last October.
Really?
I've been painting since 1993.
Uh-huh.
And this is a recent shift.
Mm.
And I like the word shift because often we'll talk about a person's work becoming different and it's generally a visual thing like, oh, they're doing figurative painting now, or, oh, they've stopped using color, or, oh, they're into photography. This to me is a pretty arterial shift change, but it's not a shift in the outcome of the painting. It's more of a clarification of the thinking that's been going all along.
I just want to say really quickly, and I think I sent you this text, I was starting to think about queer abstraction. And when I was in LA, I told you guys, this past week, and I saw this show about about African American art.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how there was a section on African American abstraction, and it's interesting because I have lumped all abstraction together.
Yes.
But every culture has a certain has a certain specific aesthetic or to some degree. You can put your finger on it to some degree, maybe what the aesthetic of a group is. And so it helped me really understand what you meant by queer abstraction. Is that kind of what you're talking about, the aesthetic of a group?
So I loved it that you sent me that image because it actually strikes to. So when I started painting in 1993, mm-hmm. 4, mm-hmm. what have you, it's hard when you can do stuff and then you're like, when you say the word artist, it just kind of changes. So I'm like, when did I actually start painting? But when did I take the name? When did I assign the N word to it?
Yeah.
So I am painting in Washington, D.C., because that's where I lived. Uh-huh. I am out because mm-hmm. I moved to D.C. after coming out.
Uh-huh.
And
recently out for you?
Yes.
That was new for you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And so I'm painting it, and I'm painting because I've met other gay people.
Uh-huh.
And the first thing that the gay people I met did was they just sort of rearranged everything. I was studying pre-law at the University of Maryland.
Uh-huh.
And I started to run around with other gay people who were creative people and were like, I don't think you're doing what you're set up to do. Who wired you this way? Because this isn't you.
I know. You've told me that you studied law, that you were
pre-law.
And it totally, I can never process that. So every time you say it, it's like saying it, hearing it for the first time.
I was also a philosophy major. So
okay,
that worked together.
Yeah, all right. Yeah,
anyway, I migrate from that. And so I'm studying, taking classes and working with a professor at Corcoran, which is now just
big deal.
Defunct art school that was in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And my mentor is at the National Gallery of Art. The amazing thing about Washington is the art world is so small that if you are doing it, you can suddenly meet the fanciest people and be tutored and critical feedback from the fanciest people.
What was the name of the person?
I'm going to say some stuff that isn't, so I'm going to. I present my paintings, and to me, it all works together. It's 1993. There isn't AZT yet. You know, like we're going to funerals all the time. AIDS is a death sentence. We're right in the plague. And I'm seeing the work that's in the museums. So Phillips, you know, Hirshhorn, and it like there's this total fascination with, you know, like capital A abstraction. So post Second World War. And that work is all about like the decimation and the horrors that are possible by humankind. So I start making work and I'm painting abstract painting. And to me, there's a one-to-one comparison to what I'm experiencing as a newly out gay man in the middle of an AIDS plague. And lack of political support, recognition, or resources to circumvent that plague. And what these people are we're talking about. So I start making paintings and I bring them to Crit and I'm saying, this is gay abstraction. It looks like this and this is the language. And the feedback I get two pieces of feedback. The first is abstract expression is a language that is historical and you need to find out your own making of work. You know, like this is a great place for you to premise, but like, who are you? Like, figure yourself out. Like you can't just walk in and, you know, like redact pieces of abstract expressionism and say they're yours. They're not.
Right.
And also philosophically in kind with that, you can't use this language and borrow it shorthanded that's being used by these people to describe this socio-political event for you and your socio-political event.
So they were basically saying, go make your own shit.
Pretty much. And if you want to talk about gay issues, use the gay language. And gay art is, you know, like historically, men making work about men having sex with men.
Yeah. I mean, that's like I can't even formulate the question, but is it like gay abstraction? Is that a gay aesthetic or can like, keep going.
Sure. So long story short, what I have been able to either figure out or become confident about or just learn from the records of others is that I, with my own work, appreciated and was fed by the assertion that, you know, like I needed to develop my own voice and my own work. And so, you know, like I've spent the better part of two decades learning to understand what it means to paint a Christopher Stout guided painting.
Right.
And I also learned to reject the assertion that abstraction is not something that's available to me, that I can paint abstract work, I can label it as queer, and I can say that this is a representation of the queer experience or gay experience.
Okay, so how would somebody, and I can't be objective about your work at all because I know you too well.
Sure.
Especially your more recent work. That I can't at all. But anyway, so how do you think, like, is somebody going to look at your work and say that looks like it was done by a gay person? Or is there something about you being gay that you're trying to express? Like, because just as an abstract work, it's hard to know exactly what that is.
I think that that is true of all abstract work.
I agree.
One of the things that just baffles everyone in general. In fact, when people walk in to a show and they're like, I don't trust myself about art. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it this or whatever? 99% of the time, they're probably looking at an abstract painting.
Of course.
And they're like, oh gosh, yeah, I'm set in this period of being discerning or qualitative.
There's something about it that you feel expresses gay or something about you, something gay. And so is that what you're saying?
I think that it expresses otherness and that otherness is something that I associate with also being queerness. Mm-hmm. So just something deviated from the mainstream.
That's so interesting.
I literally see the wheels turning in your head.
I know. No, it's really interesting. Well, abstract art is difficult to, I am not really, folks, I'm no expert and I'm not particularly well-versed in abstract art. So you have to forgive me for this. But I
let me correct you. I don't think that anyone necessarily is. I think that everyone has, there's so many processes and so many ways of getting there and so whatever, that there's no general set of tools.
Okay, well,
it's not like anyone could have handed you a primer and you could have read it and been like, oh, I'm a mat. And that's sort of the
because the abstract art, folks, is very instinctual to appreciate. I mean, there is no right or wrong and there is no way to exactly verbalize literally what it is. So I do know that. And I think that's what you're trying to say.
When I started painting and saying, okay, like I'm going to put the word queer on these paintings now, I'm going to assign them this responsibility, suddenly my experience making them and the way I feel about looking at them, they feel just like portraits.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. When there must be some aesthetic in you that I think what I'm sort of hearing is that not just you are a lot of things, and gay is one of the things you are.
Sure.
So I think that when you say gay, is that because they're personal to you? They obviously have very personal, they are, you know, you gave birth to them. Yep. I mean, right, because that's what it feels like.
Sure.
So is that...
Giving birth to something is a heteronormative construct.
Well, it's metaphorical, maybe.
You have to be male and female to give birth.
I don't know.
It's true.
Anyway, I never gave birth, but
sure.
I could if I had.
True.
If I had wanted to, probably. The point is that so this thing came out of you, and is so. In other words, gay is a part of it, but is gay also part of other art movement or work that you see in other art that other people make?
There's probably a spectrum. Mm-hmm. So I could throw out the names of people that I love who I know that are gay or queer or lesbian or bi or trans or what have you. And they make abstract work and they have this sort of bifurcation between what they do and what they are.
Uh-huh.
And then there are people who I would consider direct contemporaries and probably mentors, because I've had a lot of helpful conversations about this, who have said, you don't stop being yourself and you most accurately really become yourself when you step into a creative process. Mm-hmm. And so the things that you are bringing in engineering or fashioning something are the exact same things. Like if you're bringing the best of yourself into your painting, your queerness is essentially there.
Right. So do you personally identify more with other, like if you were going to look at your work from like an abstract art point of view, would you identify it more clearly with other gay artists?
I would identify most closely with 1970s and early 80s political activists who were using painting as a way of communicating their activism. And that goes back to what you sent me. So that's the Black experience. That's the queer experience. That's other things.
Right. So, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is this personal to you or is there a bigger movement or is this something that people are talking about? Gay abstraction?
This is something that people have just quietly sort of, I would read things in the press like every 3 to 4 years in the 90s and I would read it and I would be more confused. And then, you know, it's become a conversation and there is sort of like, I'm not a pioneer. I'm not an early adapter. It's just that it's not necessarily prevalent. In fact, one of the reasons I really wanted to do this interview is, you know, when I first showed the work at Lichtenfire last October, I got a review in White Hot magazine and the review said nice things about my work in terms of like the makerness, the workmanship, the aesthetic, the outcome, and then jumped into the queer part of it and said, is this valid? Is this possible? Is it possible for work
to be queer?
Which I got really excited. Like I was like, you know, like that person cares enough. Like I love it when people say nice things and I'm happy when they say anything.
Of course.
Like they're committing to print.
Right.
But then I will tell you, you know, like I've done, as I'm showing this work and bringing it and talking to people, people will look at me and they will like get quiet and make sure that it's okay to ask. And I'm talking about learned, academic, contemporary art world people with careers that know about work and are saying things like, what is this? So that's why I felt sort of like it was important to like talk about this because I don't think the definition is just lying around for us.
No. And I think it's really interesting because after having like a little bit of a preliminary conversation with you, when I went to the African American Museum, it kind of like made me think about that differently, that work.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, the idea of people identifying in any particular way with abstract art, it goes to the bigger issue that, like, I mean, handwriting, almost everything has an aesthetic. Everything right. we make has an aesthetic, and identity, who we are, is a really important part of that. So I think, thank you for making me think about this. And I think this is for me, this is the beginning of something I'm going to be thinking about a lot more in terms of gay abstraction, in terms of all kinds of groups of abstraction. But it's an interesting topic. And we only have 4 minutes, so I want to like make sure that we talk a little bit about the project, because I said we were going to announce it today. And I don't know what I'm excited about it, because it's something that you're the perfect person to be doing. The history, the story of the art in Bushwick, past and present, but I want to hear more about it. So tell us about it.
Sure. So I have a lot of roots with this neighborhood for the better part of a decade. Arts in Bushwick Art Creek Group.
Yeah.
Art during the Occupation Gallery. Right. Like, this is literally the first time in 10 years that I've not been the head of a leadership organization and a leadership, you know, or yeah. in Bushwick or anywhere. So that's sort
absolutely.
Of novel.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I also feel, because of digital tools, video, what have you, we have for the first time a real ease in putting a record out there and maintaining a record. Mm-hmm. So I'm, you know, specifically interested in forming a project that probably results in a few things: a book, video interviews with thought leaders of the neighborhood, and social media tools, and binds that all together. So that we just make sure that there's a record, and we encapsulate and we hear from the people who were agents of change and thought leaders in art. Like, I just don't want it to be forgotten.
Right.
There was the Club 57 show, I hope I'm saying that correctly,
yeah.
at MoMA. And I heard all these backstories about how hard it was for them. And basically the people that were in the show on some level were the people that the records were able to, like this major New York institution was at the mercy of records.
Right.
And I was just like, oh my gosh, like we should, and I am very much sort of the librarian sort of project management.
Yeah, well, because like, I mean, folks, you should understand that Christopher, among other things, started the Bushwick Art Crit Group, which is turned into, and it's still ongoing. It's a huge organization, really. And every month, about 7 artists come, and Christopher invented the whole thing and the way of doing it. And all really get to see everybody's work in the neighborhood, and then everybody gets to know each other. And I talked about this every time somebody wants to get started as an artist. I said, you should get involved with this group.
It was passed down to me from the Lower East Side, and I passed it down to Sherilyn.
Yeah, you did.
I didn't invent it.
Well, whatever.
Thank you, though. Yeah.
You invented it here. So anyway, so Sherilyn takes it over. Why don't we just tell people when Transcender is the group that runs it now. So if anybody does want to get involved in that, they should. So you have a plan on what you're going to, so you're going to take charge of this, or get it, which is so amazing.
I'm going to project manage it.
You're going to project manage it. So what are you going to get other people involved and stuff like
Absolutely.
That?
It's going to
be a big project.
All the people.
And then is it going to be like eventually, do you think you're going to have an exhibition or?
No, I don't think it's going to be an exhibition. I mean, it might be. I mean, maybe like on an institutional level. But right, right now I'm looking just to make sure we have a repository of information mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. then people have the liberty to use that information however it
makes
sense.
That's great. And also like in Club 57 days, everything was on print and now everything's digital and it's not in one
place.
So
we could have a library of video interviews, for example.
Yeah, we could, really good. We could put this one in there.
We could.